Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with L.E. Richmond. L.E. Richmond was practically born with a book in her hands, the result of being raised by an American writing teacher and a German bookseller. From a tender age, fairy tales have held a special place in her heart, leading to The Mermaid's Tale, a spin-off of Hans Christian Andersen's classic as her debut novel. When not crafting stories rooted in lore and fairy tales, she can be found chasing three little muggles, running crazy distances, and brewing homemade kombucha. She has never yet met a mermaid, but when she and her husband eventually complete an Ironman, she plans to use the 2.4-mile swim to search for one. L.E. Richmond, also Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, CJ.
I'm excited to have you here to talk to you. First of all, running crazy distances is something I'm always impressed by. I have been a referee for many years, and I say I only run if someone pays me. So someone who runs because they love running is, I'm always impressed by that fact.
That's what I used to think too. And then I started doing it, and it's weirdly addictive.
Oh, that's what they say, and yes. I have not found that yet, but I am so impressed, and good job. That's fantastic. So we're not going to talk about running today. I'm excited because today we're going to be talking about Laura's book, The Mermaid's Tale, which is a story I've had on my TBR pile for a while, and if you see the cover, you'll know why. It is gorgeous, but I just started reading it. I think it was yesterday, and I'm already halfway through loving this book. It is so much fun. There's something new that seems to happen on every page that just makes you want to dig deeper and go further. It is a great, great story. And it's a fairy tale retelling in a sense, because we're looking at the great, great granddaughter of The Little Mermaid. And I loved that movie as a child and that story. So it's fun to kind of revisit it as an adult in a really exciting adventure and story. So Laura, could you give us a sneak peek into your book, give the listeners a bigger understanding of the story than me rambling on about how much I'm enjoying it?
Absolutely. Yes. So the basic premise is that the original Little Mermaid double-crossed the sea enchantress. So she made a bargain with her for legs, said she was going to give her voice in return, but then she backed out when she had the legs. So the sea witch, she curses her descendants so that one of them in every generation won't fit in land, on land, or in the water. And so my girl, Lachlan, is the one who was born with legs under the sea. And those individuals are despised in Mermish society. So she's an outcast, lives outside the city, raises dugongs, kind of takes care of herself.
It's such an interesting twist on the original story because it takes the things we all know about The Little Mermaid, because I think that's an iconic story. I feel like Cinderella and The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, most people know those stories. Those are kind of our biggest princesses, at least in my generation. We totally grew up with all of those. So,
totally.
Yeah. And but yet then to take it a step further and, okay, let's look at her great-great-granddaughter. And it is really fascinating to consider, but also you just bring us into an adventure with this story. And so I know that it's a fairy tale retelling, so it's easy to say, okay, this story is like The Little Mermaid, but do you think there's any like other movies or books that you would say fit the feel and genre of your story so that listeners know, okay, it kind of also goes with these vibes?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a quest story. So I like to think about like The Beyonders by Brandon Mull. You're looking for something. Obviously, in some ways, it reminds me like a backwards Lord of the Rings in that they're trying to get rid of the ring in Lord of the Rings. But in my story, they're trying to find the magic locket and the treasure and all that good stuff. So both of those would be somewhat similar. As a fairy tale retelling, I love like Ella Enchanted and Fairest by Gail Carson Levine. I'm really fond of both of those. Dust by Kara Swanson. I love fairy tale retellings because I think as humans, we love that familiar aspect to stories where you're like, oh, I know this, but then also the new. And fairy tale retellings, when done well, really combine those two things.
Yes. And though I am only halfway through your book, I feel like everything you just mentioned, right on the nose, it really fits. And I love Kara's retellings of Peter Pan as well, the dust and shadow duology. That's great. And I agree. I think they always say in writing, this, you know, for the writers who are listening, it's very often that you hear, do you want something that's familiar but different? And that's, I feel like you get that a lot because that's what readers want. They want something that they can trust. Like they know when they're committing to the hours that it will take to finish a book that they can trust it because it's something they know. But they also want to be taken through twists and turns that they don't expect. And when a fairy tale retelling is done well, like you said, it really can provide that for the reader. And I am here to attest that your book is doing that for me. It is really, really fun. You have the lore of the mermaids and all of the fun that comes with the Little Mermaid vibes and something totally new at the same time. So fantastic. I love that. Now, since we are talking about the book right now, are there any scenes or characters that you really love or enjoyed writing?
Yes. So there's this funny thing where side characters often become favorites, I feel like, for authors. And I do fit in that box. I am very fond of Ginevra, who's my warrior queen, mermaid lady. She actually plays an even bigger role in the next book. And there's some sibling dynamics and stuff that happens. But I love her. She's very prickly on the outside, but soft heart, very strong. So yeah, really love her.
Oh, that's intriguing. And I always love when we get the taste of what's to come. Like, oh, and you get to see more of her in book two. Oh, yes. So yes. That is exciting. When does that book come out, the second book?
Yes, it comes out in October of this year.
Okay. Okay, so October 2024. Yes. That is so exciting. So we'll have to keep our eye out for that. I know I will be because I'm already eager to find out what happens next. And I haven't even finished the book yet. So I can only imagine how excited I'll be once the book is done. But okay, I love that. And I agree. Sometimes the unexpected side characters, as mm-hmm. I'm writing, they become the ones that I just fall in love with. And it's like, yeah, I love Bria, who's my main character, but I really love Nika. Like whenever I get to a scene with Nika, I'm like, oh, this is great. I love writing her. She's so much fun. So yes, I think that's
so great.
There's sometimes a fun escape from the head of the main character too, because mm-hmm. the side characters add new elements and push our main characters out of their comfort zone and all of that. So it adds a fun new element to the story. One of the things we love to do on Read Clean YA with CJ is talk about themes and the deeper themes in stories. And I know The Mermaid's Tale has some really incredible themes woven in. So, but would you be able to just kind of share with us one or two of the themes that are really on your heart that you've discovered through this story?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the ones that I was thinking about, particularly in relationship to this podcast, was a theme of identity, being outside of physical characteristics, because obviously Lachlan, she has legs, right? And the mermaids do not like that. And it's hard when people are treating you differently due to physical characteristics you can't control. But what I really am hoping in a non-heavy-handed way to show, especially teen readers, is that God, or the Wave Master in my book, but he made us well. He made us wonderfully. He loves us. And that there's so much more to people than that, those physical characteristics, right? There's so much more. And it's funny, it's a little bit of a tangent, but there is a fairy tale retelling movie called Penelope. And at the end of the movie, she says, "I like myself the way I am." And I think you can take that too far, that sentiment. But I think as a Christian, there is a level of being like, God made me well. So again, I like myself the way I am, and I don't have to constantly be trying to change myself and be different when God made me well.
Yes. I love that theme. And I think it's so easy to take a reality like God made us. We are fearfully and wonderfully made, right? That's a truth, a reality of every other person. We can probably easily say that. Like I could say of you or my friends or family or anyone I would meet that God made them. And so because of that, there's something beautiful in that person. It doesn't matter just about how we look and how we feel about ourselves. And yet the comments from other people, the prejudices, the way we're treated and scorned at times because of our differences in society, that can leave such a scar and a mark and thwart our thinking so that we begin to believe a lie that we aren't good enough, that who we are and our identity and our value is all wrapped up in how we look. And it's so something that breaks down societies, I think, at the end of the day, because, I mean, that's where prejudice stems from and racism and all of that, because we start just looking at the physical and the outward and say, because of this flaw or this thing, you don't matter as much, and or I don't matter as much. And as soon as we go down that road, we are believing a lie and we are walking in it in a way that's going to be destructive, not just for ourselves, but for other people as well, because we aren't accepting who God made us to be. And if we're not going to do that, then we can't walk out who God wants us to be in the world and live in the calling he has for us.
We just get stuck. Yeah, we get stuck in that messed up identity and that perception that we need to be something different. And like you said, that keeps us from being able to walk forward. And I think it's so important to have people around us who will show us in how they love us that there isn't something wrong with us, you know? People that push you to excel and to do well, but also who are like, you are great in some ways the way you are as well. And in my book, Lachlan's friend, Darren, he's like that. He likes her the way she is and doesn't think she needs to be different.
And that's so vital, community and friends and people in our lives who are going to remind us of truth in a world that really does throw lies at us on the daily. Like there's a daily lie that we can buy into and believe, whether it's just that flitting thought that goes over our brain that we then settle on and choose to believe that we're not worthy or we're not good enough or that we have these things that are never going to be overcomable. Not sure that's a word, but we're going to go with it. And we need those people who are like, no, like don't yeah. settle there. Don't live mm-hmm. there. Don't think you need to be this other person in order to walk in what God has for you, because that's never yeah. going to work. And
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That community around us can really help bring life. That's why it's so important who you surround yourself with, really, because, you know, for Lachlan, she has Darren, who's always been her best friend and someone that's looked out for her and cares about her and never seen her differently because mm-hmm. of her legs. And that is transformative in our lives when we have those kind of people around us.
Yes, absolutely. Do you, in your book, do you have people who surround the main character? Does she find her people?
I do, because I am a huge fan of found family. I think I can't write a story without found family. And I think that that's inevitably good. Becomes that community of people around your main character, you know? So she definitely does. And actually, Nika and Matthias are probably her two biggest in my book, in Bria's life, that really kind of point her back to reality and truth in a crazy that's situation great. That she finds herself in. But yeah, I think it is a really important thing. It's something that I know is important in my own life. There's mm-hmm. been seasons without community, and I saw how quickly I dried up and needed yeah. other people to be there and support me. So I think it's
absolutely
so powerful to see it through stories. Yes. When you were writing The Mermaid's Tale, did you have that in mind, that you wanted to touch on these themes of identity and value outside of physical appearance?
I actually did not. I think this is my hot take. I think that the best stories are stories that are objectively good stories, regardless of the value system. As a Christian writer, I believe that your worldview and your faith in Christ should bleed through into all of that, right? Mm-hmm. So all that to say, I think as an author, it's just really good to make sure that you're saying, is this a good story? Are people going to love this story? Is it, again, good action, good characters, all of that, and then allow the themes to almost be slightly hidden so that some, because I think I remember a writer, an older writer mentor saying to me, reader, love the like aha moment. They love the feeling of being like, I figured this out. I figured out what she was saying.
Yes.
And I just think if you're too heavy-handed, it can take that away from the reader, that they're like, well, this is obvious. I don't get that. Like, oh, I see what you were, where you were going here. So again, that sort of went off of your question, but I wrote the story first. And then again, some of those things actually became apparent to me afterwards, which is fun as a writer too.
it's definitely fun to see that come alive. And I think in most of the conversations I've had with authors on this podcast, and that I've noticed in my own stories as well, it's just that that deeper theme is found later. And even if you go in thinking maybe this is the theme of the story, at least for me, that's often thrown aside by the time I'm done. That theme maybe is kind of there, but the other theme that's more richly woven into the book is the one that the characters almost discovered with me as I was writing the story. And like you said, if you're looking to weave an excellent story, that's going to come out because, you know, God's the ultimate storyteller and everything God does has an ultimate theme and purpose and pattern in it. But yet he tells us so much through story. You know, we have the Bible that is story after story. I'm in the book of 2 Kings. So I'm reading all about the prophet Elisha and axe heads floating and armies going blind and being led into cities to be taken captive and all this kind of crazy stuff that happens with Elisha. So if you haven't read 2 Kings, you are in for a treat. Lots of cool stories. But all of that says something deeper. And yet the Bible itself doesn't always explicitly state that theme. You have to dig a little deeper and discover what is this story saying about who God is, about what it looks like to follow God, about what it looks like to turn away from God and walk in disobedience. And if you are willing to ask those questions and dig deeper into the stories in the Bible, you start to see a picture come alive that is powerful and life-changing, and you learn it through story. And so I believe the best stories do exactly what you said. They take the theme that almost God weaves into the story without you knowing it as the author until you go back and edits, and then you're like, oh my, that is totally there. And now we can kind of tweak it and hone it so that that reader can have the aha moment, but it's not the same as, you know, those classic old Christian novels that I'm sure we all read that were like, okay, halfway through, we are now in church and we are preaching a sermon, not a one sentence sermon. This is pages long, right? Like this is the literal sermon from the pastor at their church. And you're like, okay, if I wanted a sermon, I'd go to church, you know, but that doesn't mean we can't say deep and incredibly powerful things through our stories. And that's why I like talking about themes, because it can kind of bring them to life in a new way for hopefully for our listeners, because it's like, oh yeah, this is part of that book. And now let me like read it and kind of look for it with that eye. Just like how a really good pastor or teacher of the Bible can say, okay, this tells us this about the Lord. And now I can go back to my Bible and read that story again with new eyes and watch that truth become a reality for me in a new way. And that's what we hope to do with our stories. And that's what I hope this podcast does, is kind of highlight these themes in a way that maybe a listener would have just been like, oh, that was just a great story. But then in thinking about a deeper theme like this, it can allow that story to then resonate for much longer than after they close the last page of a book.
And stories just help us to feel, right? Like when you were talking about in the Bible, one of my favorite instances is actually when Nathan comes to David after his adultery and he tells him a story, right?
Yes.
And I'm like, David knew adultery was wrong, right? He had been raised in Jewish culture. He knew it was wrong, like head knowledge. But when Nathan tells him this story about someone stealing what someone else's and killing people and killing it, he actually feels that anger and that betrayal in a way that he didn't, just knowing it. So that's, again, why the stories are so powerful, because I think readers, again, sometimes you even feel it without being fully able to express it. And then like now it's great to express it as well. But feeling that truth is just very powerful.
Yes, that is one of my favorite illustrations of how stories are powerful and shouldn't be ignored, because I think it's easy to get in this weird Christian bubble sometimes where it's like, oh, well, only nonfiction and only the Bible, and then to forget that the Bible is stories, and then to forget that stories are powerful and that they have a purpose. And it's like David, he not only knew adultery was wrong, he was a king, which meant he had copied all of the law. Like he wrote it down. He probably had it on a scroll somewhere. He was very well aware of what God commanded. He knew all the right sermons to preach on the same subject. And yet none of it impacted his heart until he was told a story. And I love that so much because, like I said before, God is the ultimate storyteller. And when we create stories and we create them with him, and we read stories with that biblical worldview and asking him to show us the deeper themes, sometimes I think he really delights in doing that, because I think God delights in story. I really believe he loves story in a deeper way than we can even understand or realize.
The resurrection is the best plot twist of all time.
Yes. So true. We even have that, like, you know, revelation. You see the epic finale battle scene that happens, but, you know, the good guy totally wins. Yes. Spoiler alert. Oh. And, you know, it's the best, but it's the best reality is that we are living through God's crafting of the greatest story ever told. And I think when we open our eyes to see that, it can just breathe new life into us as well. Because it's like when you read a great book, like you said, it can help you feel emotion. It can help, for me, it helps me process emotion sometimes and express it. And as I'm writing, express it in different ways and all of that. But then as we kind of step back and realize, okay, God's working out his perfect plan and his story. And just like as an author, every time I put my protagonist through something real hard, it's because I want her to grow. I want to bring her to the next place that she needs to be. And I want her to become a stronger person by the end of the story than she was at the beginning, ready to make the right choices. But the conflict and the struggle is what gets her there. And if I realize I'm doing that, imperfect as I am, to my characters to bring her to a better place, how much more does God do that for us? So I think stories are vital for us as Christians in a way that is so easy to forget.
Yes, absolutely. And as humans, they help us just feel less alone, which is just, I mean, just crazy and beautiful. But I know that for myself, when stuff gets hard, I often think of book characters. And again, I feel less alone. I feel like, oh, they went through hard stuff too, which you're kind of like, how crazy is that? They're not real. But in a different way, they really are. And again, they just, it's just transformative. It's really cool.
Yes. Well, the greatest stories, they just reflect back reality, like what we all experience. They reflect the human emotions that span time and race and culture and all of that, and touch all of us at our heart, because they are struggles that are inherent to the human condition. And so when we hit the right characters, they resonate really powerfully. And yeah, I think there's a C.S. Lewis quote that says, stories remind us that we're not alone. I read stories because they remind us that we're not alone, or something to that effect. Me misquoting C.S. Lewis is bad, so go look it up. But it's a good quote. Yeah. Totally fits with what Laura is saying here. But yes. Well, now as we're kind of nearing the end of our time, I'd love to give readers and listeners a glimpse into you as an author. So would you mind sharing what started? I mean, we know you're dad was a German bookseller, so, or one of your parents was a German bookseller. I totally just made that up, that it was your dad. Not sure if that's true.
It was in this case my mother, but my dad was the writing teacher. Yeah, my dad taught freshman composition at a university, and my mom was a German bookseller.
Wow. So see, I don't know where I got dad from, but anyway, so your parents came with these book backgrounds, it sounds like, but what kind of kicked you into loving stories and wanting to be an author?
I did always love books, right? Because again, my mom had tons of books at our house. She read aloud to us. We read alone. Always loved books. Always loved stories. But actually, I did not think I was going to be an author. I wrote like some random stuff in my teen years that I never finished, just kind of for fun. And then I went to college for nutrition. And at the end of college, I just had a baby. So he was a newborn. And I was working a part-time job as a receptionist. And they had let me do homework at that job. So I was like, now that I'm done with school, what am I going to do at my desk job? So I was like, I'll write a book. And I wrote a book and I finished it. And I was like, wow, finishing a book is really a good thing to do. But I gave it to my mother, who is a very honest lady, which I love. I love. And she was like, it's actually good, Laura. So I was like, maybe I could do something with it. So I pitched that book. No interest. Obviously, like novel marketing, they tell you not to pitch your first book. But I did. I pitched my first book. And again, no interest. So I wrote another book, different genre, pitched that one, got some interest, but that one's still waiting for a publisher. And then The Mermaid's Tale was my third novel.
Wow. Yeah. So little did you know after you finished college with your little baby that you would be writing these.
But again, it's just been God's gift to me. Like it really, I'm so, so grateful because I got married when I was 18. And I always wanted to be a wife. I always wanted to be a mom. But I think there was a part of me that kept being like, I want to be able to be there for my family, but I want to do something else also. And I don't know what that will be that won't take away from them. And it just kind of felt like just God gave that to me. Because again, I didn't know I loved writing, but I do. I really, really do. And I've loved this community. I love marketing, actually. I'm like, it's super interesting to me. It's just been, again, a gift from God.
I love that. And I think you and I are probably two of like five authors I know who actually like marketing. And I have a lot of author friends. So it is the minority. Well, I will say that.
Let's go, CJ. Yep. Yep. Again, I find it interesting.
It's fascinating to me. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's because it works a different part of the brain than sitting down and writing.
Yes,
but it's also kind 100%. Of creating in its own sense. Is. So I love that. I love how writing became something that God brought into your life later than you expected. It wasn't like I have that same kind of story, a little bit different. But the idea of like I didn't grow up as like a 5-year-old saying I'm going to be an author one day. That was not my thing. I just love story. And so it came later in life for me, too. But also feels like a gift. It's something I love that God's allowed me to do. And I love writing more than I ever expected I would. So, but I know writing is not all you do, because not only do you have one, you have now three little ones, right?
Yes.
So when you're not writing and wrangling your little muggles, as you said, what do you do? What do you enjoy doing?
Yeah, I really like working out. So there's actually a gym in my town that does a trade program with moms watching kids. And so I go to the gym pretty frequently. I obviously love to run. My ankle was messed up recently, but I'm finally back to running.
No.
Thankfully. So I do that. Again, I love to read. So I do a lot of audiobooks at the moment because I can do other things at the same time. But yeah, do that. I'm trying to think. I have a lot of friends and family in the area. So we hang out a good bit. The random thing that I do is I like to call contra dances periodically.
What is that?
So if you're the caller, you're the person at the front with the mic who tells everybody what to do. So yeah, I just like to set those up, call them.
That's so fun. That is totally unique. I've never met somebody who is like, oh, this is something I love to do. So I love that. That's so fun.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, before we wrap things up for today, can you let listeners know where they can find you and connect with you and find your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm probably most active on Instagram, and that's just at Ellie Richmond. But I also have a mailing list. So my website is laurarichmondwrites.com. And on there, you can sign up for my email list and you'll get a free short story about actually Ginevra and Conway as kids. So you can go sign up for that. I send about a monthly email. And then my book, on my website, I do sell some signed copies. So if you're interested in that, there's that. But then they are anywhere that you can find books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, christianbooks.com.
Fantastic. And there is an audiobook version of The Mermaid's Tale. So I love audio as well. And I know podcast listeners typically are also audiobook listeners. So you can find the audiobook and it is very well done. That's actually how I'm reading the book right now, because I get through audiobooks much, much faster than finding time to sit down with a physical book, sadly. But yeah, so you can find all of that. But Laura Richmond, thank you so much for being on Read Clean YA with CJ today. I've had a blast talking with you.
And I with you, CJ. This is a good time.
I hope you enjoyed listening in on this conversation with L.E. Richmond. It's always a blast for me to chat with authors about their stories, and I thoroughly enjoyed getting to know Laura better. If you're a fan of fairy tale retellings, high stakes, twists and turns, and loads of adventure, you're going to love The Mermaid's Tale. Since recording this episode, I finished the book and it was so much fun. Also, if you're a Little Mermaid fan, this book is a must read. You are absolutely going to love all of the Little Mermaid vibes you feel throughout the story. There are some thematic elements and storybook violence throughout, and it's hinted that a villain makes unwanted advances to the main character, although that part is very low-key and may go over the heads of younger readers. But overall, this is a fantastic and clean read that readers of YA fiction will enjoy. Next time on Read Clean YA with CJ, I'll be talking with young adult author Jennifer Hallmark, author of Smoking Flax. Jennifer and I met through a virtual writers group that we're both a part of, and it was wonderful talking to her about her latest novel. This book has a rich southern feel and fun speculative elements that I think you'll love. So be sure to tune in and listen to our interview so you can hear more about Jennifer and her book. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean young adult books too.